but we'll see about starting. It may not surprise you to learn that we're going to be following on with Joseph. I've got a few verses to read to you from Genesis chapter 42. We're going to read verses 14 through to 24. So just as a brief introduction, obviously the brothers have turned up. They've come to buy grain. They, like the rest of the people in that area, they'd run out of food. So they come to Egypt to buy grain. They didn't recognize Joseph, but he recognized them. He didn't make himself known to them, and that's where the story picks up here. Joseph said to his brothers, "It's just as I told you, you are spies. This is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your numbers to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you're not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies." And he put them all in custody for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you're honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison while the rest of you go back and take grain to your starving household. But you must bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified and that you may not die." This they proceeded to do. They said to one another, "Surely we are being punished because of our brother." Obviously referring back to Joseph. "We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come on us." Reuben replied, "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood." They did not realize that Joseph could understand them since he was using an interpreter. He turned away from them and began to weep, but then came back and spoke to them again. He had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes. Just one thing, Steve, you need to come up at one point, not just yet. There's a PowerPoint that needs to go on. Thank you. In verses 22 to 23, we have the brothers discussing their predicament. As it says there, they didn't realize who Joseph was. They didn't even know that he spoke their language, as he was using an interpreter and he was speaking Egyptian. But what they'd done to Joseph was very much at the forefront of their lives. What they'd done to Joseph wasn't something that was dim, distant, forgotten, and they weren't looking at it anymore. It was something that as soon as the situation turned, they were talking about it. So it's evident that it was something that they just could not leave and let go of. They were living with their wrongdoing. And initially, what I want to look at is the three R's. They said that what they'd done about 13 years before was the reason that they were suffering as they had now. And really, they were right, weren't they? Because here was Joseph in front of them and he was saying, "Hang on, I know who you are." And then it said in the text that we read before that he spoke harshly to them, accusing them of being spies. But why was it still alive in them? Why wasn't it something that was long forgotten? I mean, it's 13 years ago. Hey, sometimes I've got to remember difficulty remembering what happened yesterday, and then my 13 years ago. But this was evidently something that was alive in them. It was bad, but surely time heals, doesn't it? We look at the first R, regret. It's not a general regret that I'm talking about here. You know, my father died before Stephen was born. I know how he loved me and doted on me, and I know that if he'd had chance, he would have been absolutely over the moon to have seen Stephen. My regret is that he never saw that. there's nothing I can do about it. It's just a sadness on my part. But that's not the kind of regret I'm looking at this morning. Rather, the regret I'm looking at this morning is a feeling of sadness, repentance, sometimes disappointment over something that you have failed to do or something that you've done. So it's an active or inactive thing. Sorry, Steve, not just yet. Could you take that one back, please? That's it, thanks. And I'm sure that we all have some regrets. You know, it's all right for Frank Sinatra singing there, you know, he did it his way, for regrets he'd had a few, but then again, too few to mention. Maybe we've had a few regrets, I don't know. But most people will have regrets for something they've done or something they haven't done. But the second R is remorse. Remorse is described as a deep regret, something further on, a deep guilt for something, again, that you've failed to do or haven't done. And regret can develop into remorse. If you like, remorse is regret on steroids. It's a regret supersized. It's something that's much deeper, something that is more keenly felt. So what do we do about regret and remorse? Well, that's the third R, and that's repentance. Repentance to God and possibly even others. There are four kinds of regret or remorse. Okay, Stephen, if you hit the button, it should come up, then you're all right. Okay, four different types of regret. The first is regrets where we can do nothing about them. Something that's happened, but we can't really fix them in any way. Regrets we can learn from. Regrets that we can ameliorate. I'll explain that in a little while. Or regrets we are able to do or able to undo something completely. So what about that first one? Regrets where we can't do anything about them whatsoever. They're set. We are incapable of doing a thing to make it better, to help. It's gone, not forgotten, but it's done and it's completed. Regrets that we can learn from. We've done something, not done something, and we think, well, I won't do that again because. And at least the good that's come out of that is we've learned something. We don't do it that way. We don't say that particular thing to that particular person, or we don't phrase things in that particular way. Or we don't go down that line of actions because we know what's coming. Regrets that we can ameliorate, or regrets that can make better to some extent. We might not be able to sort of correct completely. It's not something that we can undo to a full extent, but it's something that we can work upon and make a little bit better. But there are also regrets about something that we can completely undo. Something that we can completely sort out, restore. Something that we can make as good as new. And they are rare. They are very rare, but they do occur. If we can learn from what we've done or not done, we need to, and we do need to remember that. I've said before, you know, it's the unwritten rule in the pilot's handbook about learning from your mistakes, but also learning from other people's mistakes. If we don't learn from our mistakes, that's not good. But if we can act to ameliorate, make better, to make some sort of recompense, to try and restore something, then we need to act. It might seem easier not to get involved with that, because there's a lot of pain involved that way. But it's like a lot of things. You know, I once had a boil on my arm. It was incredibly painful. Being stubborn and young, I didn't go to the doctors about it. I was going to sort it out myself. To the extent that one evening I thought, right, this is coming out, And I dug around with a very sharp knife and actually dragged it out, the middle out. It was painful. But do you know, I sort of put sort of antiseptic in as well. That stung a bit as well, I must admit. But it sorted it and it was done. There was pain involved in the restoration, but it was sorted and it's never come back. It's obviously scared off. I'm not recommending that as a way of treatment. I'm not saying if you've got a boil, come to me and I'll sort it. Although if you are masochistic, I guess we could go down that route. But you understand what I mean. Things like that have to be sorted because they are not going to get better by themselves. And there are things that we can have regret and remorse over that we need to act about and do something about them. As I say, there are regrets that we can restore completely, but those are very rare. We have a passage in Exodus chapter 22, and it's working along similar lines. This is talking about protection of property, and it's with regards stealing. Now, obviously, you can be remorseful, regretful over stealing, but what we have here is God's idea of recompense. In Exodus chapter 22, verses 1 to 5, this is what it says. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters or sells it, he must pay back 5 head of cattle for the ox and 4 for the sheep. So not just one, but 4 or 5 times the amount. If a thief is caught breaking in and is struck so that he dies, the defender is not guilty of bloodshed, but if it happens after sunrise, he's guilty of bloodshed. In other words, you can see what you're doing. A thief must certainly make restitution, but if he has nothing, he must be sold to pay for his theft. If the stolen animal is found alive in his possession, whether ox or donkey or sheep, he must pay back double. If a man grazes livestock in a field or vineyard and lets them stray and they graze in another man's field, he must make restitution for the best of the field or the vineyard. So the idea there of restitution, recompense, the ameliorating, the making better. And if it's in our power to act, we need to. But a warning. God forgives completely. You might find that people don't. And if we act to restore over our remorse, our regret, we might find that those people hold it against us forever. That ultimately is not our problem. That is with them. But can you see in the situation that Joseph's brothers were in, if when they went back to Jacob and said, look, we've done a really bad thing here, we've sold him. How do you think Jacob might have reacted to that? Not well. I mean, it says that when he thought he died, he said, I will mourn for him for the rest of my days. Well, if the brothers then said, well, actually, it was our fault. We did it. He's not dead, but you've lost him. You see, they couldn't have gone to a stage 4. There's no way they could have gone chasing back to Egypt to try and find Joseph. I mean, where would he be? Somewhere in that land? They just sold him to a wandering band. They didn't know where they were going. So there's no way they could make a complete restitution. But they could have admitted it, but that would have had consequences among that family. So warning, if we do act to restore, the people may well be estranged forever. But the second warning is this. People cannot forgive what God needs to forgive. Let me read you something from Matthew 27. When Judas, who had betrayed him, excuse me, saw that Jesus was condemned, he was seized with remorse and returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and the elders. I have sinned, he said, for I have betrayed innocent blood. What is that to us? They replied. That's your responsibility. So Judas threw the money into the temple and left. Then he went away and hanged himself. Now Judas went to the high priests and said, look, it's all wrong. This guy's innocent. I've sinned. Well, it was good that he confessed to the chief priest that Jesus was in fact innocent, but they probably knew that anyway. But he really needed to have gone to God first, because men cannot forgive sin. Because could Judas have been forgiven? Yeah, of course he could. If he'd turned around to God and said, look, I've been a thief, I've been a betrayer, and I've done this absolutely terrible deed, please forgive me, then God would have forgiven him. He could have then gone to the chief priest and said, look, here's your money back, this is all wrong, this is innocent blood. But Judas could have been forgiven, but he went to the people to confess his sin, and that doesn't work. He needed to go to God. What Joseph's brothers did, as I said, was cataclysmic for Jacob. It says how he refused to be comforted over his loss. And that was something that lived with them right up until this incident in Egypt. They did not forget it. It did not die. It was alive, and it was very near the surface. They were aware of the wrong that they'd done, but I don't think they'd ever come to terms with it. And they'd certainly not done something about it. But instead, they decided to live with the deception, all of them, because it was a whole agreement to be silent about it. But the problem is that the wrongdoing, even in that conspiracy of silence, was living with them. And something like that is like a parasite, because it lives off you. It consumes you, and you most certainly will have no peace. They weren't going any further. They weren't sort of developing in their idea of how things could go. They were frozen in time, and that thing would not go away. And the fact that it came so readily to their conversation shows how close to the surface it was. But don't forget, there was a range in the brothers. Some were out and out to kill him. Reuben turns round to them and says, didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? He was going to go back and rescue Joseph, because his idea was just to throw him in a pit and leave him there. But it tells us in the text that he was going to come back later and rescue him. But even he, in the situation, was silent. So how did that eat away at him? How did that sort of work in him? But he still went along with a conspiracy of silence. So we see remorse, we see regret, but we don't see any repentance. But what about Joseph? In Genesis chapter 41, verse 51, it says this: Joseph named his firstborn son Manasseh and said, it's because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. Joseph was prepared to leave, to let go of all that had happened. It wasn't something that dominated him, although possibly up to that time it had. And it wasn't something that drove him. And there's no doubt that there are times when we need to let go of the past. We need to let it be. But had he forgiven? Had he forgiven his brothers for what they'd done to him? Had he forgiven and let go of the betrayal that he felt and what he suffered as a result? I would say not. You know, in Genesis 42, verse 7, it says, as soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. Can you imagine what that was like? Here he is going about, he's second in command in Egypt, he's sorting everything out, this group's brought to him because they're foreigners, and he looks at them and he knows who they are. And here he is, the one in power, and here they are, the ones bowing before him? Was the fury? Was the rage? Was the wrath? Was there the sense of revenge? Possibly, it says, you know, he was there, he was speaking harshly to them, and he had them put in prison for 3 days. And we must never forget forgetting with forgiving, and never confuse them, never mix them up, because they are very different. When we forgive, there is no outstanding debt. When we forgive, that cannot be brought back up again, because it's paid for, done, signed, sealed, and finished. We might not forget, but we never hold it against that person again. It's never brought up in a conversation. It's never mentioned in a sort of almost throwaway style, because that is done and it's dead. It's finished. Sometimes we may need not to forget what's been done, because that could be foolish. An abuser can be forgiven, but it would be foolish to forget and act as if nothing had happened, because there could be other things there, and there could be the possibility of a reoccurrence. So the actual act can be forgiven, but we may need to act accordingly and not forget. If we simply forget, there is no resolution of the problem. If we simply forget, then it can be brought back again. If we simply forget, it's still live. But we see in this passage that Joseph, unlike his brothers, is not bound by the events. He chooses to let go. We see a different tone in verse 18. It says, on the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God." Over those 3 days when they were in prison thinking, what on earth is going to happen here? I'm sure Joseph was wrestling with God. And out of this other side, on the other side of the 3 days, we see someone who is not wanting to get revenge, even though he was in a position to do so. I think as well we see someone who's been softened by God. 3 days. 3 days of wrestling. 3 days of working with God. Because you see, real forgiveness, unless it's trivial, is not easy. Real forgiveness can be a battle. Real forgiveness costs. Real forgiveness can hurt. And real forgiveness can leave deep scars. And if there's any doubt of that, we simply need to look at the cross, because that's where we see the absolute ideal of forgiveness. We see real forgiveness in its full gory detail. We see real forgiveness in its excruciating pain. We see real forgiveness in the agonizing battle to endure. And a choice, a path of forgiveness that is a choice. In Matthew 26, 52 to 54, there they are in the garden. The guards have come. Peter pulls out a sword and slices off one of the servant's ears. And Jesus says to him, "Put back your sword, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you not think that I could call on my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?" The choice was to say, "No, we're not going that way." We see in the garden the choice, where Jesus is coming to his Father and saying, "If it's possible, take this cup of suffering from me, yet not my will, but your will." The choice to be someone who goes along with the Father's will. And we need to remember Matthew chapter 6, verse 12, where we are taught to pray, "Forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors." Because as we look at the forgiveness of God, we remember the perfect example that shows us that we too need to forgive. How often instead do we jump to judgment condemnation, and possibly even retribution. Joseph could have done all that and more, but the choice was no. And that's why I believe it took 3 days between, first of all, having the brothers arrested and coming back to them, because for 3 days I believe he was wrestling with the idea of forgiveness. It's not easy, but it is necessary. And we need to be people who, if we have regret or remorse and can do something about it, we do. But we also need to be people who, when others come to us, we're prepared to forgive. We mustn't be like the brothers who remain where they were. We need to be like Joseph, who was prepared to change. And remember, we forgive because we have been forgiven.